By any objective measure of changes, of code, of anything like this, one person looks 10, 15 times more productive than the other. But it doesn't mean that that's what's happening, right? There is, until we come up with an objective measure of value delivered somehow, right? You know, there's no real way. And that's why we focus so heavily on teams effectively, right? If anything, the value I find in the developer level metrics is where do we need more support?
Is your engineering team focused on efficiency, but struggling with inaccessible or costly DORA metrics? Insights into the health of your engineering team don't have to be complicated or expensive. That's why LinearB is introducing free DORA metrics for all. Say goodbye to spreadsheets and manual tracking, or paying for your DORA metrics. LinearB is giving away a free, comprehensive DORA dashboard packed with essential insights, including all four key DORA metrics tailored to your team's data, industry standard benchmarks for gauging performance and setting data-driven goals, plus additional leading metrics including merge frequency and pull request size. Empower your team with the metrics they deserve. Sign up for your free DORA dashboard today at linearb.io/DORA or follow the link in the show notes. Welcome back to Dev Interrupted, everyone. I'm your co-host, Connor Bronston, and today we're joined by Jason Krohn. Jason is the Global Head of Delivery and Digital Product Engineering at Syngenta. Jason, welcome to Dev Interrupted.
Hey, listeners. A quick heads up that we're taking a week off next week, so we won't be dropping a new episode on Tuesday, March 5th. Instead, Season 4 will resume on March 12th. Now, back to this week's episode.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. It's fantastic to have you on. We've known each other for a year or two now, and you've got over a decade of experience leading teams around the world. And you've also done that while scaling your teams around the world. That experience has given you a really well-rounded perspective, and I think you're ahead of where a lot of other organizations want to be as far as their engineering metrics program, your culture impact, and how you approach it. So a couple of years ago, when we were having guests on the show, like all I didn't want to talk about was that hyperscaling piece, but you've had to do it efficiently. It's not growth at all costs anymore. And you've really cared about culture throughout the entire process, about the experience your engineers are having, all while scaling from 150 to 400 developers. And so what I want to talk about is, how do you scale efficiently? Considering the complexities that you faced, how do you build and grow teams while ensuring people are empowered and autonomous? What's your approach?
So it starts with the people themselves, right? You have to hire the right people and then empower them with the things that they care about effectively, right? As we started small, it was easy to do. Right? You have a small team. A small team is attached to a product. They get a thing that they can directly care about. It's very easy for them to feel engaged effectively, right? As your teams grow, though, you start to lose a lot of this. You start to bring in a little more of the enterprise. You start to bring in a little more of the friction to their work effectively, right? And so as we've scaled, we've needed to change a few of those things around effectively, right?
So how do you identify what the right things are? What developers want, as you said?
An important part of building and scaling a team for us, at least at Syngenta, is retention, right? Mm. So we want to hire good people. We want to get out of their way, but then we want to keep them. Your most impactful teams are the teams that have had people there for a while.
Right.
Who understand what's going on, who understand the complexities of what they're doing, who can then sit and partner with the business to really understand, hey, we have an opportunity. Can we seize it? What does it take? How do we do it? What's the right way to go about it, right?
So they have the cultural context and kind of the depth of knowledge that you want to see to lead teams, frankly.
And the systems knowledge, right? So agriculture is very seasonal. And so when we come in with the market opportunity, the business side is going to want a thing done, right? That thing may not always be feasible.
Right.
But if you have a team that deeply understands the product, the context of the business, the context of our user base, we can get to how can we achieve that value in the time frame that we have effectively, right? Which may not be what is explicitly being asked for.
Interesting. So that's how you are driving decisions that align with organizational goals, it sounds like.
Absolutely. But you have to keep people for that, right? And for us, I'm a big believer in four pillars for people,
okay,
right? So you have to compensate people fairly. You have to give them a pleasant place to work, give them work they care about, and give them growth, right? If you give them those four things, they will stay for the most part. There's always some people who they want to switch domains, they want to go do something else, and that's fine. But if you give people those four things, right? One, you can stand up and say, I value you and I respect you, and you're true to your word effectively, right? If you don't give them any of those four things though, they will go somewhere else to find those things. And so we really try hard as we scale to always keep those things in mind, right? To, from a salary perspective, we need to be competitive. I can't say that I value what you bring to our organization and I care about you and underpay you, right? Now, that doesn't mean we have to be top of the market for everything all the time, but I have to pay you fairly for what you bring effectively, right? We have to give you a pleasant place to work. And that can mean everything from your laptop can't be slow for what you do. The build processes can't be onerous, right? You can't have all these little annoyances during your day that make you not like your job effectively, but it's also our office, the culture that we have. Like, you want coming to work to be pleasant, not something you don't like effectively, right?
That makes total sense. And I mean, aligns to, I mean, so much research in the field, right? Of like, you know, happy teams that feel engaged, like they can make an impact, are more productive, they stay longer. I mean, this is very clearly like how you're building this organizational matrix, how you're rewiring the social circuitry of your organization to work and retain folks. But what are the kind of guidelines you put into place to make that happen?
For the rest of that retention.
Yeah.
Because then there's the other two dimensions, right? Mm. Those are two. The other two is, I got to give you work you care about. Thankfully, at Syngenta, we have work people can care about, right? We're all about fighting climate change, sustainable agriculture, regenerative agriculture. How do we use technology and precision agriculture machinery to help people do better, to do more? That's better for them and better for the earth. So it's thankfully been easy to get people on board. And the things around that, there's data science around that, there's systems work, there's web work. So we have a mobile work. We have a lot of work there. Then it's about knowing the people. What do they want to do? What is their career path, right? Because the fourth pillar is, I have to give you growth, right? And that growth has to be visible to you. You have to know where you sit. You have to know where your next steps are. And you have to feel enough agency in how you get there, right? It's not enough to just say, in my opinion, here's where you are. This is the next level. Please go do it. Right. Yeah. Like it's a balance of, there are things that the individual needs to do, but then they also need support from the organizational side to get there. And so what we find is, if I can give you all those things, if you can see your future here, if you feel that you have control over that next step in your career, right? Whether a promotion to senior engineer, or engineering manager, or staff engineer, whatever it is, right? If you're being paid fairly, if you love what you do, if your work environment is pleasant, right? Those are kind of the structures that we put in place to help with that retention and that scaling.
Given the seniority of the team that you're focusing on and the strategy you're describing, it sounds like you give your people a lot of autonomy.
100%. I mean, we believe in full autonomy for our teams, right? They know what needs to be done. Now, there's a challenge there, right? Yeah. But at the end of the day, whether it's from a process perspective, what do they run? Do they run Scrum? Do they run Kanban? What's a program increment size? How do they deal with things? They know the answers, right? And this is where we structure a lot on, are we delivering value or not? If we're delivering value, then it's up to those teams to decide the most efficient ways to work to do that effectively. Now, there are a lot of challenges around that, right? If you look at introductions of technologies or frameworks, building things different ways. Yes. When do we build into a platform type model, and when do we take on tech debt to build a silo, right? Where we've struggled as we've grown to proactively tackle some of those. And so there's been some things we've had to go back and kind of redo. But at the heart of it is autonomy. It really allows us, and it aligns with Syngenta's business model, right? If you look at agriculture, agriculture in Brazil is very different than the US, which is different than Europe, which, by the way, is different in almost every country, different from Ukraine, different from smallholders in India and Vietnam and the rest of Asia Pacific, right? So all of these products, as they're looking at their markets, need to be empowered to take the decisions that are right for them in the moment to kind of seize value.
So how do you figure out if you're doing that efficiently and making your team work to the best of their capacity?
For us, this is where the metrics that we've introduced are helping, right? I mean, we focus on three things in the metrics. Are we working efficiently? Are we working effectively? And are we working safely, right? So efficiently is all about, for the people and dollars we're deploying, for the effort that we're deploying, are we using it in a way that is valuable? Are we not sitting around waiting for things, right? But all that efficiency doesn't matter if we're not capturing value in the market effectively, right? And so you know, that's where we expand on things like the DORA metrics with other things like usage and KPI metrics from products in Amplitude, right? An analytics platform to understand, are we having the impact in the market? And then the last one, safety. Our industry, like many others, deals with a lot of user data, a lot of grower data. And so as you look at privacy, as you look at regulatory, as you look at those sorts of things, we have to make sure that you can be fast and you can deliver value, but if you're doing it in a way that is unsafe or not compliant with the laws we need to be compliant with, none of it matters. And so for us, these metrics have really given us those dimensions across it.
What kind of results have you seen?
It's been great. You know, we've seen things like an 80% reduction in cycle time this year.
Wow.
We've seen a 33% increase in planning accuracy. And this is, we've done this not from like a top-down mandate, right? A big focus on all of our metrics was as we looked at the basket of metrics we were going to bring in, what actually supports those things? What supports being agile, not doing agile, right? What supports steady, sustainable feature delivery? What's healthy for our teams? And paints that picture of, are we effective, efficient, and safe, right? And then we gave these tools to our teams and say, hey, look at this, right? If there's something you're unhappy with, please move the needle on it. And they were able to. And it's forced a lot of really good discussions on our side, which has been great. Some of it procedural, process-wise. How do we work across the business? How do we work with stakeholders, with product, with design, to make sure that work is in a better state of ready? How do we make sure that we're reserving the right amounts of capacity for steady state, for run and maintain, so that we can be more predictable in what are we going to do? When we make a commitment, we can achieve that commitment effectively, right? And some of those things have led us to better adoption of different tooling, for example, right? As we looked to decrease cycle time, like many enterprises and things, can't go to production that often. Yeah. We can't go every day, but it's sped our adoption of feature flagging to allow us from an engineering standpoint to push out and then be able to do a controlled rollout to our different user groups, you know, as we do that promotion through production effectively, right? So it's been good on both sides as we rolled this out.
So what I'm hearing is you're not just leveraging the analytics side of LinearBee's platform, but you're also using those analytics and the context you get with your teams through these cultural efforts you're doing to say, okay, let's identify friction points and apply workflow automation tooling and other, you know, goal setting through GitStream or through the LinearBee platform to actually, I mean, destroy these friction points and automate them away. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, 100%, right? No two teams have the exact same problems, effectively, right? Yeah. And so for us, it's really about how do we paint the picture for the teams? How do we help them understand where is there smoke? Where might there be things that we want to go look at and reevaluate, right? So when we first rolled this out, everyone has an answer for why the metrics are what they are, right? And we push just a little bit on, let's go reevaluate some of these things. Some of these we can't, right? So for example, simple things like cycle time's long, QA is on a different continent. This introduces a big delay. Okay, let's change it, right? And this gets down into the autonomy of the teams, right? We're pairing this metrics work with a lot of organizational change on our side. So we have a big focus on a team topologies framework.
Fantastic framework.
Yeah, if you're familiar with it. And so we're really pushing a lot on, just because we've done something in the past doesn't mean we have to do it that way going forward. And the teams are 100% in charge of that and free to make those changes, right? So for example, one of the metrics, some of the things we've started to expose to teams is investment level, finance.
Oh, wow. So you're showing investment metrics for like what projects are being worked on, which is
all
like
products,
a really cool part.
Product level start, right? So for example, you would have teams that, and I get this as an engineer for a long time, right?
Yeah.
They always want to try to solve the problem with what they have at hand. This is always what they're looking for, right? And by the time it would get up to leadership of, we actually need two more people for this for 90 days, whatever it is, right? It's too late. Why didn't you tell me this earlier, right? And part of it is they didn't realize and have that product level investment visibility down to them to understand what are our options, right? And so one of the things we're starting to expose along with these metrics, right, is here's your budget for the year. Here's your current burn rate. Here's what you have. And so you can take some of those decisions to say, hey, I want to bring on some additional resources for 6 months, or I want to move QA from across the globe to a nearer location? What are the cost implications of that? Work with the with our product and business teams to understand, hey, is this a move we want to make, right?
This is so fascinating for me because most teams I talk to that are using Linear B's investment profile metrics are leveraging them at the board level or with their C-suite. And they're saying, oh, yeah, like, here's what we're doing. You know, let us know your feedback, or like, here's how we're delivering it. But you've taken this other approach because you've built these senior autonomous teams and the leadership within that. You're saying, hey, we're going to give you the input. Like, let's make sure you feel this passion in it. And I think that that really goes back to something we talked about a bit earlier, which is the need to make people feel like their work matters and like they can make an impact. And you're giving them all the tools and information to do that, which is a really cool bottoms-up agile approach.
100%. And we track everything across these projects very, very granularly.
Yeah.
All of the people allocations, all of the cloud costs, license allocations, everything. Because as we look at an investment profile for a product, right, that product is free to spend their money to achieve their objectives, right? And so we're trying to put more of that data and more tools in the hands of the teams so that they can be, as we look at team topologies, they can be more autonomous in those changes. They know what changes they can make. And it's not only later when the pressure is really on, are they making those changes, they're starting to see some of those signals earlier of where might things not be ideal. And then they're able to proactively make those changes.
That's fantastic. Where are you seeing teams leverage some of this tooling, like GitStream's programmable workflows, for example?
Our usage of like some of the automation stuff, like Worker being GitStream, have been really valuable from a cycle time standpoint for our teams, right? So it's really interesting if you look into the cycle time, like the depth of cycle time, like code and
the breakdown,
pick up and interview, right?
Yeah.
All of the metrics, all of the thresholds are things that all teams would agree on, right? No team would say, we want our PRs to sit for 3 days and nobody looks
no
at
fun,
them.
Yeah.
And no one would say, we want our reviews to take 2 days, right? But often they don't know, right? Mm. And especially in, as we look at current working climate, right? One, we're a global distributed company, but also everybody's really, for the most part, remote first now, right? Even if you're in a hybrid environment, you still spend a lot of time remote. And when someone puts a PR in, does the team know? Even if they ping somebody in Slack, you know, you get the dreaded, someone will look at right?
Yeah.
And so for us, where Worker Bee and GitStream have been really valuable there, right, is one, just providing a prompt to the team so they know, hey, there's a thing that needs to be done, but also the reminder when it when it's approaching the threshold that they're setting effectively, right? And then for GitStream, the other big part of PRs, right, is you don't know if it's going to take 3 minutes or 30 minutes. You have people, you know, they try for this flow state. They want to be productive. They don't pick it up when it comes. I'll pick it up later, effectively, right?
Yeah.
So just the annotation of who should it go to? How much time is it going to take? How much risk is in this? Our teams have found a lot of value in using those together to kind of just keep on top of some of those things around that review process.
It's fantastic to hear your teams getting so much value out of that because it's the thing that we imagined when we started this that we could help provide. So wonderful to see that. I'm also really curious. So I love that you're providing these investment benchmarks to the team and investment metrics because I think that your approach is fascinating and really useful where you're creating self-organized teams that have goals and are excited about achieving them and have autonomy and drive and seniority to do it. What are the other dashboards? What are the other analytics pieces that your teams are leveraging the most, do you think?
Outside of
the investment profile piece.
In Linear B?
Yeah.
We try to not have them in there.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
So this is where you're leveraging your other dashboarding.
Our Power BI dashboards, And the reason that we find is that it paints a piece of the picture. So when they want to focus on the delivery piece, right? Linear B is those dashboards are super valuable there. So for example, when they want to dig into why is planning accuracy low, right? And not the subjective part of why planning accuracy is low, because everyone has their opinions.
Yeah.
When they want to understand, okay, what didn't we get done? What came in that wasn't there? Like what? It's a great tool for that. But when we start to evaluate, are we having the product impact? Okay, now that work is all in Amplitude for us effectively, right? Are we doing it safely and securely? Okay, for us, this is all in Sonar Cloud. Are we meeting our FinOps goals against cloud costs and things like this? This is another tool that we run, right? And so for us, we aggregate all that together into high-level dashboards with Power BI, utilizing the APIs that all these platforms have, right?
I mean, this speaks to the configurability piece and then the need for that extensibility and how important it is whenever you're picking something for your SDLC.
Huge. And it's been really, really valuable for us, right? Because the other thing it lets us do is create really diverse aggregations of the data effectively, right?
Interesting.
And so we can, what it lets us do in this really distributed way is at the bottom level, teams can get the picture of their metrics, right? At the pure product level, or for some of our larger projects, the squad level within there effectively, right? Regions can care about only products that sit with them. We can roll up to global and we can always look at the right aggregation level of metrics to understand, are we doing well? Are we trending in the right direction? And then also the big thing for us from a BI perspective is outlier detection, right? Mm. Is the aggregate metrics may look great, but that doesn't mean there aren't teams that should be paying attention to different things effectively, right? And so the API access and the ability to get data out and marry it against other systems data from our side has been hugely, hugely valuable.
I love the philosophy you're taking here too, because you care so much about the culture and it's such an important part of your strategy as a leader, saying we want senior teams, we want to like build our people up, retain them. And you've very clearly been intentional, like we want teams. We're not going to measure you on individual metrics. Not, we're not going to screw you over by focusing on velocity, which just gets people to game it. We're going to say, how can I enable my team to deliver and feel passionate and build a unit that delivers for Syngenta?
100%. The dangers of metrics are huge, right? Everyone's been in an organization that, whether it's intentionally or not, weaponizes metrics against teams and people.
Totally.
End of story, right? And this is so much of our focus is on the teams, right? Is on how can the teams use these as tools to get better? It's why at a higher level, we look and care about aggregates and trends. Because the risk is if you put any doubt into their mind that these metrics will be used for evil, you lose them, right? And this gets into, I talked a bit about it today.
Totally agree.
Ownership versus compliance, right? If you get them to own it, if you get them to care about why are we looking at these metrics, how do these metrics align to the way they want to work and how are they a benefit to them to care and look at these metrics effectively, right? You'll see movement. If you don't, you just get compliance. Velocity is a great example that you brought up, right? Of everywhere. People just game velocity.
It's a dangerous metric.
They just make the points work. We've all heard it. I'll bring in this one's a soft 2 points. So I'll bring that in to make sure that we can get the number that we need. And we'll just make that one a little bigger. And, you know, it's not a valuable tool for anyone then effectively, right? And that's the risk to me that any introduction to metrics brings in and why how you use it and how you talk about it is so important.
And honestly, I think this is why we at Linear B see Syngenta as a really fantastic partner. We share this philosophical belief in the value of engineering teams and the avoidance of this over-measurement of individuals saying, you presented earlier today with Ori Kieran, our CEO, a fantastic presentation on Syngenta's transformational push and how you're aligning engineering metrics and workflows and cutting down on blockers, which I want to get into in a minute here. But like my biggest takeaway was how philosophically aligned we are around this perspective on how engineering orgs need to do this. Like, yes, metrics are dangerous. It's also, I mean, frankly, it's a necessity today. Like, you're not going to get away with it if you're an engineering leader. We have to be the ones to define the conversation. Otherwise, we risk, I mean, the McKinseys of the world coming in and saying, oh, focus on these individual metrics. And it's a big reason why, like, when I talk to Ori, he's like, yeah, we can talk about developer productivity. That's the phrase a lot of people use. But, like, let's talk engineering efficiency. How do I create high-performing teams that are more efficient?
Well, and developer productivity is, it's nonsense from a metric standpoint.
Yes.
Yeah. And no matter the metric you choose, right? And it's as simple as you can have people working on incredibly complex subsystems in a team and another person who's churning out controllers and APIs and things like this. By any objective measure of changes, of code, of anything like this, one person looks 10, 15 times more productive than the other. But it doesn't mean that that's what's happening, right? There is, until we come up with an objective measure of value delivered somehow, right? You know, there's no real way. And that's why we focus so heavily on teams effectively, right? If anything, the value I find in the developer level metrics is where do we need more support?
Right? I think Martin Fowler wrote an article back on like 15 years ago where he's like, you can't measure developer productivity. And I really see that today. Like people are still fighting that. They're like, well, I don't know if I take this approach. I was like, no, like help your team succeed. Build high performing teams. And I think it's something I really admire about the approach Syngenta has taken. And I know as you've scaled, you know, as we mentioned at the start of the conversation, over the last 2 years or so, you've built your team from 150 to 400 developers. I know you've ran into a lot of blockers in that time frame. And especially as you kind of are in that hyper growth, everything starts to become a blocker. What were the problems you're running into and how did you address them? I know we've talked about some of them already.
So for us, right, it's the evolution of small to big, right? Yeah. Especially as our products got bigger and things like that. But eventually, as we look at from code starts to production, right, is at every point we started to notice there's another handover, there's another blocker. This takes time. Whether it was development to QA, let's ignore the whole cycle time of review and things like that, right? He has to go to QA. Now we need DevOps to provision some infrastructure. Now we need a security review. And each one of these is a handoff that takes time, sometimes days, sometimes weeks, sometimes hours, right? And as we look to measure our team of idea to production, right, those blockers are killing our teams, right? So a simple one is QA, right? We scaled QA a lot in India. And for our teams in the Western Hemisphere, cool, you're done with your code, you hand it off, the next day someone from India has picked it up and they've put in a defect, and now you got to fix it. This churn is brutal, right?
So much context switching you're creating there.
And even then, a little bit of overlap, you got 3 hours in the morning where everyone can be in the same meeting, which means in the U.S., people are starting earlier than they want to. In India, they're staying later than we want to, which is also an issue around retention and employee happiness, right? And then you add in the DevOps and the cloud part and things like that. And so we really quickly identified we have to break this or we can't break these other things, right? Because the teams will say, I can't go to production faster. I'm waiting. And as part of the team topologies, a big part is all those things where I'm waiting, we have to turn those into I'm not waiting effectively, right? And so from a QA standpoint, this means we need a much bigger push into automated testing, right? Even simple things like over time, we had good automated testing, right? You have unit testing in place, that's fine, but automated integration testing, but then a manual regression would take 4 days, right? 4 days.
Yeah.
And then they find something, right? Cool, we need to push automation into all of that. It has to be in the build pipelines. It has to run as part of what we do. We need fast feedback on these cycles, right?
Yeah.
Same thing around security and compliance with things like Sonar Cloud. Same thing, DevOps. We have to move everything to infrastructure as code. We need repeatable, safe deployments, right? And so over the last year or so, we've been working really, really hard on for each of these touch points that was kind of a manual handoff, a manual intervention of how do we move these into automated processes that we can then make either part of the build pipelines or part of APIs, right? That we can then execute via build pipelines and things like that to turn them into non-blocking dependencies. We can build code, we can run it, we can get the feedback, we can fix it and ship it.
Awesome. So your focus here, it sounds like, is saying, okay, this is a blocking dependency, let's turn to a non-blocker. Let's automate that away, let's change it, let's reduce the friction point.
100%, yeah.
This is a really fascinating approach to take. I think it like really speaks to the core of how to improve efficiency. While you're doing all this, though, how do you communicate with the rest of the org and make sure they're bought in to the vision?
So everyone has to buy in.
Yeah.
Right. So even from an engineering standpoint, you have to get their buy-in.
Totally.
To do all of these things. And a big thing for us is the why, right? We have to communicate, and we haven't always been great about it, of why are we doing a thing? Why should anyone care about that thing? I challenge our teams a lot on this too, by the way, right? Is I've been in a lot of sprint demos and things like that where they show what they've built. And I ask one question, so what? Don't show me what you built, right? Yeah. Tell me why I should care that we spent any time building this thing. What is the value we're bringing? Why did we do it, right? And I think often, from a leadership perspective, we don't do a good enough job of this. We'll have a call, we'll talk to everybody as a group, we'll have a great presentation that outlines why we're doing a thing and all this, and then we leave it, right? And so we've been trying to work a lot more on just hitting that message more often, helping explain the why, building the right enablement teams internally to help spread the message, go work with the teams, help them through some of these adoption curves that you get and things like that as well.
This seems like it could also be an improvement opportunity for that career laddering effort you're making as far as trying to raise up more leaders and help so educate
the career ladder is huge for us. It's one of the things we put in early, about 2 years ago, effectively, right? And it's a huge part of retention, right? One of the worst conversations that you have to have, if you don't have these things in place, is someone comes to you and says, I want a promotion. And you have to say to them, no, not only no, here's why, right? It's like, I don't know if you watch baseball, it's like arbitration.
Oh, right? Totally, yeah.
Where the player is going to go in and say, these are all the reasons I'm worth a bunch of money. And the team goes in and says, here's all the reasons you're not.
Yeah.
And even if it's true, it damages the relationship.
Absolutely.
It doesn't feel good for anybody. And so we built a very robust career ladder for the engineering side. We're trying to do it for other things, right? That kind of outlines for every single position we have, right? To a junior, to a mid, to a senior, up through staff and principal or the engineering manager route. What are the roles and responsibilities there? And in three dimensions, right? So there's the technical and domain knowledge, which a lot of people focus on, and it's great, but it's table stakes, frankly, right? Then there's culture and leadership and teaching and mentorship, right?
Gotcha.
And as we go through all of these, what are our expectations of you at this level? And then what does success look like in this role, right? So for example, like junior level roles, I expect to give you kind of story level stuff. I expect you're going to need a little help on implementation, and then you can go all the way up through senior staff where I'm giving you very complex problems. You break it down. You look at the trade-offs of time versus value, business context, all of that, right? And our whole goal with this is we then pair it with a proficiency matrix that we have, which is like 18 different dimensions that we measure. We modified one from CircleCI use. Because the reality is people are very multidimensional. No two people are the same, right? You can have people who are great leaders, but maybe they're not as good at some of the technical stuff and vice versa. And those two people aren't better or worse, right? They carry different things. And so we do that twice a year. And we look at where you're at. Where are you strong? Where are you weak? And where do we need growth? And that growth can be in many different places. That growth can be, we need you to learn something. That growth can be, we need you to get better at something you already know. And that growth can be, we need to give you opportunities. Mm. So for example, often as we look at this like mid to senior level developer, one of the big gaps, because the whole matrix, everything we evaluate is things that you've done, not things we think you can potentially do, evidence-based things, right? Is system design and architecture, right? Often at a mid-level, they're not getting a lot of opportunities to showcase these skills and what they've learned. So as we go through this matrix, we then pair that with our career ladder and say, okay, here's where you are. Here's the next level. We look at the capabilities and we look at, okay, how do we get there, right? What is the training we need? Where do we need you to demonstrate things? And where do we need to give you opportunities to demonstrate skills that you've learned, right? So that as we go through our comp cycles, we go through the promotion cycle every year, everyone's on the same page. We don't have any surprises. We're having those talks. And it ties to retention because it lets you see your path. It lets you feel, I mean, like I know how to get to the next level. I know what I need to do. I know what the company needs to do. And I can see how I get there effectively.
How do you pair this with that dimension of mentorship you mentioned? Because I feel like, to your point, you know, table stakes often becomes the technical side, but it can be a lot harder to find engineers who are really strong mentors. And
we coach them.
Okay. Let's talk about that approach. Yeah.
You have to. Right. And so I think one of the things, and we developed kind of an internal training at Syngenta for this.
Very cool.
Because as I saw through my career, what you often end up with, right, is you have senior engineers. They get promoted to a tech leader, an engineering manager position. No one teaches them what that means at all, right? It's just, like, okay.
Throw in. Yeah,
go manage people. Yeah. This happened to me as well in my career, by the way, right? Go manage people. And no one tells you what that means effectively, right? And for me, eventually I got a really great mentor. And when did he said, you got to send this guy to some training. And it was fabulous. Changed how I do everything, right?
Exactly.
And so I took a lot of that and developed this program of like, hey, here's what this means, but in concrete details as well, effectively, right? Not just, I need you to lead more. What does that mean in the context of your role, effectively, right? And so we take people through that. Syngenta also has a very robust internal training system for managers and things like that. Because it's not, for some people, it comes naturally. But for others, it does not, effectively. And you have to coach it. You have to teach it.
And you can still hone those skills, even if it's something that you think you're good at. There's opportunities to hone and develop it. I really appreciate the intentionality with which you approach your people and your systems design, because that social circuitry is so important, and it's clearly playing a huge role in your success and the growth of your company. So my hat's off to you. Are you hiring right now? Is that something we can shout out on the show here?
We're always trying to hire.
All right.
Yeah. Our biggest problem is no one knows what Syngenta is.
Okay, well, hopefully now they'll know a little more. Yeah.
But no, I mean, it's intentional for a reason. I don't do anything. I'm not writing any code anymore. I don't do anything to ship those products. Without good people and good teams, we go nowhere. All the leaders, all the management, none of it matters effectively, right? And so this is, I think, why at Syngenta, we have such a big focus on those people, because they're the people who actually get the things done for you.
Well, if our listeners want to learn more about Syngenta's roles or the company itself, where can they go find more information?
Yeah, so we just put out a blog, Syngenta Digital, on Medium. We're going to post some more things there. You'll see a write-up. We're going to do a write-up of the operation.
We'll link it right in the notes thing. Then.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
And yeah, otherwise, Syngenta Digital, we have a website as well. But yeah, if you're interested, feel free to reach out. So
fantastic. Jason, thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Yeah,
it's been
absolutely
a really wonderful conversation. Pleasure to have you here. Keep collaborating with you and learn more about the approach. It's really exciting to see, as I mentioned, that intentionality with which you've approached this and the success you're seeing because of it. Before we go, I just want to shout out that we'll be featuring Jason on our DevInterrupted Substack, devinterrupted.substack.com. We're really excited to have you on the podcast, and thanks so much for coming on.
Awesome. Thank you.